So I think number one, growth equals happiness, period. If I'm growing in four buckets, it's going to be emotional, physical, financial, and spiritual. If I'm growing in those four areas, I have joy. I have happiness. If I'm lacking in one, I feel it. But I'd say growth equals happiness. It's a Tony Robbins thing. Growth equals happiness, period. And so for me, that's what joy and fulfillment is for me.
Welcome to the Deeper Than Dough podcast. Today, it's brought to you by Dirty Dough. It's what's on the inside that counts. We got some cookies from Mike. He's bringing our guest who owns franchises.
Even
Dirty
better.
Dough cookies. I love it.
It's our first time eating cookies on the podcast.
Yeah.
It's going to be good.
And it's a requisite.
Yeah, for sure.
Every time.
And apparently this ooey gooey is the fan favorite for quite some time.
I don't know, but we're about to find out. Brock Hill is our guest from Cash Capital Partners, who, it was Dalton that connected us, right?
I believe so.
Shout out to Dalton, our producer over there.
What up?
And then, yeah, you ended up buying some franchises. You guys opened up Ogden, partnered with Bronson, with David, who we had on last week or 2 weeks ago, former Crumble franchisee, stellar team. So super excited to have you.
Thanks, dude. I'm really excited as well.
Let's start with just a super brief 1 or 2 minute, 3 minute maybe background of Brock.
Yeah, very, very conventional. Grew up small town boy. Very, very small town boy.
Money you can was tell an it issue. In the voice.
Oh, I appreciate
That's it. That small town another, voice, man.
Northern Utah,
that trusting voice.
Straddles Idaho guy.
Northern Utah.
Yeah. And did the conventional thing. Played a lot of sports. Went on the mission. Came back from the mission. Worked labor. Decided I never would work labor again.
What was it? Construction?
No, it was actually building cabinets. So I ran these big machines building cabinets. When it got roped into that door-to-door community, did that for a long time in Texas and super grateful for it. But then started getting pitched on a lot of different things and slowly started seeing that I didn't know what was actually being sold. I didn't know terms, I didn't understand term sheets. And I felt like 99% of the people in the room were investing in stuff because their neighbor was doing it.
Yeah.
And I was like, what in the world? This is a FOMO I've never seen.
Uh-huh.
What if we actually could educate people to understand alternative investments?
But how did you go from the door to door to looking into the
just lots
investments?
Of money. Just had lots of money.
Okay.
You know, like I feel like I was getting pointed at, sorry, let me say this. A lot of my superiors were investing in cool alternative plays and I was seeing them and they didn't really know how to explain them either, but it was just because I was making money in door to door.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you take all of your own cash and put it in?
I do. Yeah, we would do a pretty high allocation of our cash and put in. Yeah, I wasn't raising any funds or any capital at that time, just putting in my own money.
There you go.
So.
And then Cash Capital Partners is now about educating investors, kind of lowering that. I mean, we talk about with Dirty Dough, lowering the barrier of entry to entrepreneurship. You guys are lowering the barrier of entry to investments.
Yeah. We want, there's a lot of hype around high net worth earners, family offices, and we want to go and raise a lot of money from them. Guess what? Raising money from those places is fun. It's hard. Mike, you can attest. You guys can both attest. It's just different.
Yeah.
I like those people because they have similar headspace and mindset as me, but I want to educate the doctor, lawyer, dentist, small business owner, farmer who's got $1 million or less in the bank, and they just want to plug it in and to a private equity player or real estate something. Especially Dirty Dough. I love Dirty Dough. And so that's why we're doing these locations with you guys.
Which we've had a lot of people that want to get involved. And it's like, you know, we've done the best that I know how to make it, you know, low cost. You can put maybe $50,000 down with an SBA loan. But even then, it's like we still have to have 50 cash.
Yeah.
Right. And where you guys come along and it's like, oh, well, we can accept 25 cash. And then on top of that, we're going to make it 100%
passive. 100%
passive.
That's the key to me.
So that's been really good to hand off some guys.
I appreciate you.
We're in that space because, we don't want to turn anybody down on an investment opportunity. If it wasn't a good fit to buy a franchise, that's it. It was just not a good fit to buy a franchise if we can get them in another way so they can, just that kind of, we're accredited investors, you know, and everybody caters to them and you're kind of coming in and saying, no, I could cater to them, but as well as to everybody else, which I think is super, super awesome.
And I think reciprocally, I've had, I think, two or three people that are like reaching out to me. Hey, what's this dirty dough? And I express the opportunity. They're like, no, I want to do my own. Great. Uh-huh. That's not what I want to do, because I don't want to operate. I want to have a great operating team.
Yep.
Low minimums. You can plug in more. But if you want to do your whole thing, I'm going to send you to Bennett Mike. You guys are going to crush it.
Yeah. Well, so, we appreciate that.
What other investments have you looked at that you've been excited about?
I get really excited about values-based SaaS. So I'll give you an example. We did this is kind of not SaaS, but consumer tech. Yeah. If you guys have heard of Trumi Wireless yet, it's a Gap competitor.
Oh, yeah.
Amazing. Okay. Amazing. Really early on, there was two founders of Gab, and they broke off because of a misalignment. And so we've looked at that. We did quite a bit in the Trumi Wireless play. One we're looking at right now is really looking at school security, right? On a level of what we're seeing throughout the economy of school shooters, et cetera. I can't imagine being a father. I've got a 3.5-year-old, 1-year-old. I can't imagine sending my little boys to school where there's not something that can identify the threat and take it out. Because you look at the Gap, it's like 36 to 60 seconds that we've got bodies on the floor, right?
Yeah.
Really hard. But if there's a solution that could shrink it, why wouldn't you do it? And now we're in like this solution I'm looking at is like 700 schools haven't taken a round of funding. And so we're looking at that.
And what is the solution? That's interesting. Because talking about that, like if I've had fears. Your house,
at my house.
What? It was a psilocybin journey, and that was like one of the deep fears that I had of I went to school shootings. I'm like, I have no control over this.
Yeah.
What the hell do you do?
Yeah, there's very
and that few, just shook me.
Yeah, dude, there's very few solutions, and I think it's a blue ocean right now. It'll become more red, but it's called Emergent 3. It's a Cache Valley based software program.
Okay,
really cool. So. If you have a play or you have a plug into a school, get it in there. It's super cheap, and it's amazing.
Well, we're getting wellness centers into a ton of schools, you know, mm-hmm. and then we partnered with the Cook Foundation, and they're in 2,500 schools right now.
Oh my gosh, dude!
And now what they're in is they're educating parents on how to talk with their kids about mental health. But I'm sure a lot of that has to do with fears and anxieties around school shootings, because I hear that like that's. You know, we did the fire drills and earthquake drills, and now they do school shooting drills. Like that's got to make you think a little bit differently about life on a mental standpoint.
My wife's a teacher, and she's just as scared as the kids are. Yeah. It's like, why did they want to be subject to this?
Yeah,
it's crazy.
It is a real, like, I'm at a point where I'm thinking, do I just create my own school with a few other affluent parents in the neighborhood? Mm-hmm. And like, we shove them in the back, you're in like the CrossFit gym, and we get a professor from Utah State, like, that's where I've gone, but I also want them to have an experience like I had, maybe around more people and diversity, yeah. et cetera. So.
Makes sense. So you want to ask the first question or you want me to?
I'll ask it. join fulfillment. So that's what we're all about on this podcast. And really, again, going towards the emotional side of what we're seeking rather than the financial side. And because the financial side doesn't give us anything other than an emotion that we're seeking. So if we could figure out what that emotion is, and then we go for that emotion particularly, rather than, you know, if that includes making a bunch of money, cool. If it includes making a little bit or medium amounts, it doesn't matter, but like really attaching that to that emotion. So for you, what is joy, fulfillment, success? How would you define, you pick one of those terms?
I want to say one thing before I answer that, because yep. I think patterns are power. And pattern utilization is peculiar. I've said that for a long time. Like, you look at the pattern of money. See, these guys, like the bell curve, they start making money, 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 money. And then they're like, shoot, I'm not happy. Right? Like, I'd say 90% of people don't know how to handle that amount of wealth. Or they, mm-hmm. like, maybe just in their own paradigm. And so I like that because I got to a point where I was just making good. I still make good money. But it's nothing additional comes emotionally from a good place. It's just you become more of what you were a lot of times. So I think number one, growth equals happiness, period. If I'm growing in four buckets, mm-hmm. it's going to be emotional, physical, financial, and spiritual. If I'm growing in those four areas, I have joy, I have happiness. If I'm lacking in one, I feel it. But I'd say growth equals happiness. It's a Tony Robbins thing. Growth equals happiness, period. And so for me, that's what joy and fulfillment is for me.
Is that growth, progression, right? And I mean, I agree with you. And I also think it's to dive in deeper to, well, what does growth mean, right? So like when I was knocking doors, because you mentioned that, growth would be, well, did I get more sales today than I did yesterday? Did I make more money today than I did yesterday? Did I charge it more money or whatever? And that would beat the hell out of me if that's what I was focused on. But if I focus on growth of, did I craft a better pitch today? Did I have more conversations today? Did I become a better salesperson today? Then when I focused on that side of the growth, it was a lot easier to keep going.
So yeah. Focus on the process and not the outcome.
Yeah. I mean, for me, it was, yeah, who am I becoming rather than how much money did I make that day?
Yeah.
So even on the financial side, if I didn't make money or I didn't make as much, it's kind of the mindset shift of, well, I don't need to make more money today to be growing financially. I could be growing my skills to ultimately make me more money and kind of focusing on that. But that was a big difference in that door to door. I mean, it's so mental, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like every day you start at $0. And if you don't make a sale, you make $0 and you lose money in gas.
Making me nervous. Just so thinking about it again.
I mean, shifting that mindset and really defining that growth and knowing how to identify that.
Yeah.
Just to know if you're on track or not, I think is super important.
I think the micro, like looking at more of like a micro versus a macro is key, like you're saying. But I think those are my four buckets. And so I can niche down on what those mean to me. Uh-huh. Like I know this year, this is what I need to make feel like I'm growing financially. As a father this year, I have been working on blocking more than ever. I'm seeing some of my employees are like, is everything okay? You didn't respond to me on Saturday. I'm like, you're going to see me unplug harder than I ever have, ever. Because my time as a father is the only thing that actually matters in life now.
Yep. That's awesome.
As a husband or as a son.
So most entrepreneurs go through the journey of, because I definitely have work. And I don't need to have a relationship with my kids, and an amazing relationship with my kids, because I'm working for them. I'm having more money for them, for my spouse.
Yeah.
And so many people are still in that mindset. How did you break free of, I'm not doing this for my kids, right? And be like, no, the kids are the reason, the time spent with kids are the reason I'm working. Not I'm working so they can have more toys and gadgets.
I remember I was in Hawaii this last year, and it was like in August. We're climbing Mauna Kea. Really, it's a volcano, right? And it's a big ride. And a man that I really, really love and trust, he's from up in Alberta, Canada. He's a big, big, big shot attorney up there, and he deals with a lot of divorce cases. He's a divorce attorney. And he goes, go and work your brains out, because the kids won't ever remember that you weren't home. And I remember like just suffering on this bike. I'm really clear on the bike, right? Uh-huh. Just suffering on my road bike. And I remember my gut just being like, whoa.
I've heard the same thing.
But John, I will remember. I said, how did you do it? How did you do all those years without being home? I said, I will remember that I wasn't there for those kids. So since that moment, dude, like it's been a total paradigm shift for me.
So he gave you the opposite advice, and you're like, whoa, I don't want to ever become in that mindset.
Did you ask him how good his relationship is with his kids?
No, it was too heavy.
I mean, and now science is on the side of, it doesn't matter if they don't remember, because they do. Like the development is they are typically saying 0 through 7, but I heard the same thing. They don't remember. Like now's the time. I got the same advice. Now's the time to work your guts out, because your kids don't freaking remember if you're playing with them. And then you look at the science and you're just like, you go find me somebody that worked their guts out, missed their daughter's kindergarten graduation, and is looking back and said, I'm sure glad I made a few extra bucks. Like you go find me that one freaking individual and then let's have the conversation. But like, I don't know if that exists, that people are like, I'm proud that I missed all of these dance recitals because now my kids can have financial freedom. It's like, no, I don't know if that's what they wanted. I think we kind of lie to ourselves, and we say, because we're addicted to work and we're addicted to stress, as freaking crazy ass entrepreneurs, and then we justify it by saying we're doing it for somebody else. So it's selfless. And it's like, nah, it's always selfish.
I completely agree. And I like the, I think something to kind of put a bow on top of what you're saying is, look at the Tony Robbins six human needs, right? First one is significance. Mm-hmm. I think that's the one that just dominates. Primarily male entrepreneur fathers who are just martyrs. And that's got to stop, dude. The significance piece, like, what if your six, you know, you do your own research on the six human needs. I won't go through them today for lack of time. But, like, there are other human needs that are way more powerful, like growth and contribution.
Yep.
You can plug into those kiddos and you'd never regret. Never regret.
Well, I think on the flip side of that I've been reflecting on recently is, like, we all have a fixed amount of time. I have the same 24 hours as you and you. But, like, my job to optimize is to maximize in what I delegate. Mm. And so, like, if leaders can get over the hurdle of, like, I need to do this because no one can do it better, they can delegate, build the process, then work on the business rather than in the business and scale it faster.
Amen, dude.
So I think there's a lot that needs to be retaught in how businesses are built first off.
Yeah.
Which creates more freedom and more connection with family.
We're lacking a lot of vulnerability, I think, in the workplace, dude. And it's a beautiful thing when you finally get a whiff of it. It's freeing, man.
Yeah. And the funny thing is, why are we lacking that? And I think it's because I don't want to share that last week sucked, right? Because I don't want people to think that I'm not doing a good job. But I really think that the opposite is true. As soon as you connect with somebody and be like, no, we sucked last week and here's the hurdles, but this is what we're doing to overcome. I think that builds more trust than, like, oh yeah, everything's good. If I ask a freaking startup founder, how's everything going? They say good. I say, you're either lying to me or that's just a program in your mind. You just say good because it's not going good.
It's a red flag.
I can promise you it's not going good. Not all the time, right? You have high highs and you have low lows. But I do feel like that allows, I mean, I want to feel that connection. You know, if somebody's selling me something and they only give me the pros, I'm like, okay, well, obviously there's cons, or you'd be a bajillionaire. So, like, what are the cons? And rather than me going having to research them, just tell them to me, right? And then maybe I can make a quicker decision. So I do feel like it's not, vulnerability can still propel you to be a better business owner and build that trust with clients as well as team members.
Yeah.
So jumping into mental health, what are some mental health struggles that you've had, and how do you be proactive with mental health to stay in that correct mindset, the contribution or the growth or whatever kind of gets you back on track?
I used to, and I still struggle with this, but inferiority, right? I don't know where you kind of push that into, what area of mental health, right? But inferiority used to creep and just sit and be a very dark place for me, right? It's a comparison, right? You know, the old quote, what do they say? Comparison's the thief of joy. It really was. I mean, it was sucking my life. Door to door, it was heavy for me, right? It was like, I have to win. I have to be the number one. But I was very inferior. And the thing that, number one, that's helped me is I've spent time around the right people. I'll give you a quick example. Another little road biking analogy. So I was my first year road biking, and it was my third race. It was the Cash Grand Fondo, which we're going to sponsor together here. Sweet. Coming up here in 2 weeks. And I remember I was training. I was doing like 16 miles an hour, like on flat stuff on my own. I thought it was pretty good. Race starts, group of 500 people. Get about 5 miles out, and I'm feeling it, right? I'm sucking wind. I'm looking down. I'm looking over.
How long is this race? So you say 5 miles in.
Yeah, this is only 75 miles, right?
Okay, so
yeah, skinny tires, though. Miles. Skinny tires and spandex makes you go farther.
Right? I know, but I just wanted to put that in perspective of 5 goes into 75, 15 times. So you're 1/15 of the way.
1/15 of the way.
Okay.
Are some of these guys pro riders too?
They're good riders, not necessarily.
So most of these riders are probably averaging what, 23 miles an hour, 24, 25.
You're literally right on track, dude. I look behind me and there's 3 people. Right. Well, I look in front of me. There's only like 30 people. Right. So there's 34 of us roughly. They're in that peloton. Right. And I look further back and there's 400 people. Right. 400 something, 50 people. And I look down at my Garmin at my bike computer, and I'm going 23. So it was instant, dude. I was like, whoa, I'm part of 10% right now. Huh. And the reason being is because I'm spending time with the right people. I'm with these people. If you get dropped off at Peloton, to get back on it, so hard. Because you got wind, you got mental, you've got all this stuff. But you stay in the right group, you succeed, right? And so that was a big, big game changer for me on that. And so really, when I started spending time with the right people, I stopped feeling in fear because I noticed they had a lot of the same issues, right? Like everyone kind of struggles at times and it sucks a lot of times. It's just about the decision that you have on your emotional state.
Yeah. I was reading about suicide rates because I'd heard that suicide rates are higher in affluent people, richer people. And when I looked into that, it wasn't as accurate as I thought. But what was accurate is one of the studies that I'm sure that this quote came from. It was people that earned an average, like they were earning less than the average in the neighborhood. Those are the people that were the highest risks
for suicide. Say that again.
So if I'm in a neighborhood and the average income is 50,000 and I make 35,000, that puts me at risk. Ooh. But I can also, and everybody else making 60,000 in that neighborhood is feeling on top of the world. Will you put that same 60,000 income earner in a neighborhood that the average income earner is making 120, that person's suicide risk goes through the roof.
Holy moly, dude.
So it's that comparison effect. And so when they started looking at neighborhoods to neighborhoods, they were finding the low income of the neighborhood, regardless of if they're making 35, 60, or even 100,000, it was what percentage of that was in relationship to the average, which is just crazy. Anyways, because I mean, I was very like, what does cause the mental health? You know, there's so many things that cause mental health illnesses that eventually can lead to, you know, anxieties, depression, and then suicide. And man, comparison seems to be probably the top one, especially looking at the social media, you know, expectations and reality of just who do I think I'm supposed to be? And I think that's where you see some of the lowest suicide rates in those poor countries that don't even have freaking social media. They don't have the internets and things like that. They're not comparing themselves. Their neighbors aren't going to Paris or going to Lake Powell or going to anything, right? Yeah. They're just living their lives and they're not, I guess, as tempted to make those comparisons. And you see that in not just lower reports of, you know, anxiety, depression, but actual suicide rates are much lower.
Yeah. I like, go ahead, Mike, sir.
Well, I was just going to talk, this has been like the last week, something that I've been like sitting heavy on. Because like when you're such a high achiever too, like regardless of what you're doing, you always feel like you should be doing more. Mm-hmm. So whether it's comparison or inferiority, and I really had to sit down with myself all weekend and say, like, why am I doing this? And what I reflected on was not having clear enough goals that drive my energy to just focus on that and really define who I am again. Because once you can channel that energy into very specific tasks, then you know if you're winning or losing, because the game's really only against you. I'm the biggest advocate or opponent to myself. So once you change that mindset, that unlocks a whole bunch of free energy to go after what you want.
Yeah. You guys listen to Alex Hormozi?
Yeah, I started following him recently, and I freaking love his stuff.
Isn't it so good? Like, I believe you met him a while back, right?
Yeah, I met him in February
of
this year. Yeah, we were on a podcast together.
Total fanboy over that. But, like, I love what he says a lot of times. It's like, well, I should be doing this, okay, compared to what? Like, says who?
Yeah.
Like, you should be doing this compared to what, right? In the cycling community, we'll bring it back one more time. This will be my last spandex rant, is straight up.
Spandex is more comfortable, though.
It is.
if I could wear that all day long, game on.
That needs to be the snippet. So what I'm bringing here is that, you know, there's all these things that track your times.
Yep.
Strava, that's number one, right? That's where the cycling gods live. Well, most guys will go and look at how I've been doing against the community, my local community. Am I number one? Do I have the KOM, the King of the Mountain? I hate that crap. It sucks you in so damn fast. But what if you do? What if you just look at you and your achievements? You'll see every one of my rides. I'm doing a PR, or I'm doing like a little bit better than I was last time. That's a big celebration. Mm-hmm. And we have to focus on that. It has to be you against you against you and nothing else.
Well, I was listening to I started following Sam Long. He's one of the main tri competitors right now. He, in his last win, I forget where it was, maybe it was St. George, but he made a comment, he's like, or maybe it was his first one of the season where he lost, and he was talking about the only reason that this other person did it, like, won is because I didn't show up for myself today. It's like, I let him win. It's like, oh, like, that's a level of confidence when you are pushing so hard. He was like, I need him to start challenging me more, so that way, like, it's actually a fun race.
That's awesome.
And that when you're so focused on yourself, you can have those conversations.
Yeah.
Just put the blinders on.
Comparing yourself, I just kind of re-listened to this on the Waking Up meditation app. Mm. You're talking about the Headspace.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you weren't talking about that, but... And he goes, okay, you're stuck in a traffic jam and you're late for a meeting and whatever, and you're pissed, or the kids are throwing something and you're tired and you don't want to change a diaper, whatever that poor situation is. He goes, if you take a second to relax and to breathe and to really internalize, there's at least 1 billion people on this planet. And he goes, if you're able to listen to this podcast, you're one of them. There's at least 1 billion people on this planet that if they traded lives with you right now, they would consider all of their prayers answered. And so it's just that perspective change of who am I comparing myself to?
That's deep.
Right?
Steeper than dough?
That's deeper than dough.
Maybe we need one of those deeper than dough moments on every
Someone pushes the button.
Well, that's another. And I just saw one, speaking of social media, here's a good thing about social media. I've seen this reel 2 or 3 times. And you put the picture with your kids and then there's this voice in the background and it says, I just got this advice that when you're in one of these tough moments, that I think it's like, I have 3 kids and 2 of them, I mean, all of them boys, and I just want to kill them at sometimes. But I got this advice from my friend, and my friend said, in those moments, imagine you have a time machine, okay? You're 80 years in the future, or you're 80 years old, so however many years that is in the future. Now take that time machine to go back to this moment. And how would you feel now? Like, you're 80 years old and now you get to be with your freaking young ones again. And it's just like, holy shit. You could just change your, it's all about perspective.
You would do anything to go back there. I would drain the bank accounts to go back there if I could. I know that.
And then we're in the moment, we don't enjoy it, which is just crazy. Here's one more that I've heard. It was a conference talk actually from forever ago when I used to go to church. it was Uchtdorf talking about peanuts on the plane. He's like, people are on the plane complaining about the size of peanuts, or that they don't have more snacks than just the peanuts. And he goes, but what they don't realize is that the richest of the rich, 500 years ago, the kings and the queens and the pharaohs of the world thousands of years ago would have given anything to be on this plane ride and to soar through the sky like a bird. But yet we're living that. And so I think about that quite a bit, usually when I lay down at night, because I lay on a purple mattress.
Oh, you're a purple guy too.
I'm a purple guy.
Cool.
But it doesn't matter what the mattress is. I sleep on a more comfortable mattress than freaking Julius Caesar did. Like, I do. And I have a more comfortable pillow. And my blanket's more comfortable. And I have an air-conditioned house. And it's like the richest of the rich and the kings and the queens. And they had all the power in the world. They don't have those luxuries. And I get to have them every single freaking day. Why? Sheer luck. I just happened to be born in this time. So I should be grateful for that.
I love that.
Anyways, there's a few perspective changes for you guys.
Got some nuggets there.
I love that. Can we go over one more mental health thing?
Yeah.
About shame. About shame and guilt.
There's a lot.
I mean, that one, I feel like in the culture I was brought up in, which is predominantly I feel like Utah, the church, etc.
Yep.
Man, that was so hard to finally stop feeling things that were unnecessarily needed to be felt. I think this is my opinion, and my opinion only, public service announcement. I think there's good and there's evil. There's wicked and there's wicked. And I think wicked needs to be felt by people who have committed wickedness, and there needs to be guilt. But I think shame is just so necessary. I think it's like, hey, did I learn from it? Did I move? Mm-hmm. Because in my opinion, we were talking with the Dirty Dough team the other week. we're talking about how we were having so many employees working in the shop and our labor was high. I'm like, hey, and the tone was getting low. I mean, it was getting like, wow, we suck, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, no. There's no failure. There's literally only feedback here. Are we going to change or not? Like, we don't need to spend another second in this shame hole. And if we are, then we might not be the right team.
I've got a couple points on that.
Let's see.
One is on a talk by an Amazonian leader and then also leadership on shame and guilt. But the Amazonian leader, they were talking and he said something that was interesting, like talking about psychedelics and different things. But he was talking about how in the Amazon, most of those people had never seen the white man. And when the white man came to colonize them and bring religion, they didn't know what God or the devil was. It was just doing good at that moment. And all of a sudden, shame was introduced into their culture. So it's a mindset shift of, do we actually have these things, or are these a construct that we put on ourselves to feel a standard that you and I is socially acceptable, or do we see past it? So that's one thing of shame. Like, is it manufactured?
100%.
And then the other piece of shame when it comes to leadership, like what you're talking about, is like, as a leader, we can set goals for our organizations or our company, but we also set the pace. So if we're driving our team over the edge and we make them feel shameful for not meeting goals or outcomes, is that on us to change the pace and realign so that people aren't feeling shame and get out of that mindset? Or how do we construct good leadership that allows people to achieve and not be in that shameful mode? Because when you're in shame, you can't perform. It's very hard.
Let me just take a stab at the first one.
Go ahead.
My opinion on the shame. A lot of societies, it's shameful to kill somebody. And a lot of societies, it's always shameful to kill somebody. And in our society, it's okay to kill somebody if it's for America. And it's also okay to kill women and children for America by bombing them sometimes, right? But you look at kind of any shameful act and you could find cultures that is shameful and other cultures that's not. It's like, no, I killed myself and blew up a church because of I'm now going to go to and have a bunch of wives or whatever in heaven. Anyways, I just think that's very clear evidence of it's taught, 100% taught.
Yeah. Yes.
Or else everybody would feel shame around the same things, but that's 100% not true. So it is introduced.
I like that. Thank you.
And the good and the bad. So you're saying that this Amazonian, there was no heaven or hell. It was just you do good.
You just do good.
Yeah.
Like you live with the earth. You do care for the earth. Like that's what it was until religion came in and all of a sudden there was a good and a bad and church and principle.
And this is what I was taught in religion. And I just was talking with some people last week in Belize about it. Because one of the guys expressed his views. Anyways, the point is if you're atheist, well, then what's the point of anything? What's the point of living? And it's like, okay, well, so if something's going to end, that means there's no point in doing it. Well, what about every day of your life? Like, you're only going to be with your daughter for 1 year while she's 1 year old. So does that mean you shouldn't be with her because that's going to end? You're only going to be happy going on vacation with your family to Florida that one time you're on vacation with them. That's every emotion ends. But it's like, that's not any justification. I mean, that's what makes us enjoy it more, right? And a lot of people point to, well, no, you have to have this, a religion or whatever you want to call it, but so you can have that shame, you know, they're pushing that you have to do this or you're shamed. And it's like, well, no, you could just do that inherently. Like you don't have to have a heaven or a hell. It's just, you want to do good because you're doing good. Or if you don't believe in God, how come you don't? What stops you from killing people? And it's like, well, if the only thing stopping you from killing people is your belief in God, then you're a fucking psycho. Like, what do you mean? That's the stupidest argument. Anyways, because we went on this trip and this guy was expressing his views of atheism and he was getting some of these feedbacks. And I'm just like, all of those automatic responses were just taught to us growing up. Of like, wait, without God, I would kill everybody. Without God, there's no point of life. You know, and it's like, people live without it. It's just that framework of how you view it.
Yeah. Is there good shame?
I think there's failure. I don't know if it's like you can be hard on yourself in a sense of failure, but I don't know if it's like shameful.
Yeah, I think there's good shame. So, I mean, because shame is a way, if we feel it, it'll change behavior, potentially. So should we shame people that are rape people? Yeah, we should probably shame them. I think it's better. I mean, somebody could argue differently. Should we shame people who have sex with children? Yeah, I think I think that should be looked down upon, and I feel like people should be shamed and shunned for the betterment and kind of the utilitarian approach of society.
I love that. I'll give one little example just came to my mind. Went to the Bees game with my little boy. Been a few times this year. Such a good time. We sat left field, right in the sun, 1:30. And we were getting hot. It's a little guy, 3.5 years old. He gets hot fast. His little cheeks turn red. He's like, "Dad, can we go sit in the shade?" I said, "Yeah." So we move over. We go behind home plate up top, right? And we get up there, and he's like, "Dad, look." And I'm pulling up my phone to take a video, an Instagram video. And he looks at the camera, and he goes, "Dad, would you watch the game with me? Put your phone away."
And how old is he?
3.5.
Heck yeah. I love that.
Beautiful, most beautiful little boy. And I mean, that moment of shame was really good for me.
Yeah.
And I said, "Yeah, buddy." And I put the phone away. Okay. 10 seconds later, foul ball comes. We catch it. Freaking changed his life, dude. Like,
that's cool.
You know, it was a special moment. Next game we go to, it's a night game. I didn't learn. We get in a truck. We park at the car wash across the street from the ballpark. And I'm driving, and I have my phone up. He goes, "Dad, would you put your phone away and just drive? You can listen to music." And I'm just like, "What is this?" And it was just a great opportunity. But I think that shame was good for me to feel. Do very evil and wicked people deserve to feel guilt and shame? I completely agree. But I think to some extent, as long as you said it, as long as we learn from it.
If it's driving behavior. It's
so healthy, man. Yeah. It can be healthy.
And I think it's my daughter does the same thing, and she'll say, "Dad, what's more important?" That's she destroys me. But if I
melt,
if I do this, if I do phone driving, she'll always say something. And I do think that to share, like, "Hey, these are my values, and I value time with my kids," and you're sharing this with your kids, and like, "When I'm with you, you're the most important." They will call you out on that. They'll hold you. If you share that expectation with them or your spouse or with whoever, and give them permission to call you out on it. I mean, kids, you don't need to give them permission. They'll just do it.
Oh, yeah.
Like, "Dad, you told me this." Anyways, last question before we jump off. What is the legacy that you want to be remembered by when you're gone?
I want people to show up at my funeral. And I want people to go, "Man, that guy lived. He spent moments with me." Whoever's sitting in that audience, he spent moments with me. He created memories with me, and money was secondary. And I want my kids to sit there and go, "That was a good man. I want to model and resemble that man." But I also want them to sit there and go, I learned a lot of lessons from what he did do wrong. Because I know I'm not going to be perfect. Like, maybe I have 70 years. Maybe I'm dead tomorrow. I don't know. But I hope that they take away the things that I did wrong, and they learn from them because of stuff that I taught them on how to learn from what I did wrong.
I love that.
Yeah.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you coming on. How do people connect with you?
Yeah, connect. LinkedIn's great, Rock Hill. You've got our Cash Capital Partners Instagram page as well, and then cashcapitalpartners.com.
Okay. Love it. Thanks for your time, Brock.
Okay, thanks guys.
For jumping on. Bro, I appreciate it.